Welcome to another Innovation Forum podcast with me, Ian Welsh. Today I'm with Rob Waterworth, CEO of the Mullion Group, and we're at Innovation Forum's Future of Food Conference at Inmarsat Conference Centre in London. Welcome to the podcast, Rob.
Thank you very much.
We've just been talking in a session around radical transparency for businesses. It's certainly the case that before you can get to transparency, you have to have trust. Now, how does your work in the forest sector tell you the dangers for businesses in terms of losing trust and what the consequences of that can be?
I think the forest sector is a really interesting area because in many ways the issues being faced by the food sector at the moment were faced by the forest sector 20 to 30 years ago. After the Second World War, the forest sector was seen as a fantastic industry. It was a growth area. It supported a lot of rural communities. It was a highly trusted industry. However, in many countries, the activities of forestry, in particular logging of large old natural forests, led to a loss of that trust, especially in the 70s and 80s. And in Australia in particular, for example, the forest wars. And it's taken a good 20 to 30 years for the industry to now come out the other side and start to really show that it actually has net benefits to society, not just financially, but also across the environment. I think the food sector is going through the same thing now.
So what are the barriers to transparency then for the food sector that you see? I mean, I guess one is going to be data.
I think data is always a problem, but in many ways is the issue too much data? And we often do see that. There's a huge number of competing mapping products, for example. There's a large number of groups collecting data all over the world and publishing it in reports. Probably in many ways, one of the bigger problems, and which is the areas we work in, is how do you pull all that data together, integrate it in a coherent way, and then provide it out in useful interfaces that people can actually interact with and understand what's going on in the landscape and basically provide that transparency. So while data is certainly an issue in some places, it's a mix of either too little or way too much.
For your clients then, how do you help them identify the data points that are key?
Well, I think the key thing is to actually start with what their needs are. And unfortunately, and this was a really great comment made in one of the earlier sessions, about that there's this real push on technology these days. And we need to pull back from that a little bit. The technology is definitely there and it's fantastic, but we really need to stop and think about what is it that we're trying to answer first. Once you know that question, then you can start using the technology. And often, unfortunately, many areas are really, to be probably a little bit too frank, there's solutions looking for a problem.
So, okay, well then, how do you get beyond that? If you're a business struggling with trying to develop a more transparent approach, engaging with stakeholders up and down supply chains, what are the data points that you need to look for? What are the kind of key things you need to be thinking about while you plot your way through?
Firstly, the key thing is to be working exactly with those stakeholders and understanding what the information needs are and treat it much more as a policy question than a technical question. There's always technical solutions that can be derived. But the key thing from my side when we're looking at these metrics is actually setting the criteria in place. So, for example, you're going to need a long time series of this information typically. You need that time series to be consistent. You need to know how often you need to be able to update that data. You need to be able to say how much is it going to cost to update that data? What are the linkages between other data? Otherwise, you end up in a situation where you have potentially hundreds of metrics, which are very difficult to measure and potentially not particularly useful, as opposed to a few dozen, which are extremely useful and can basically form the backbone to transparency and ongoing management.
This is a process, I think, that you classify or you categorize as data integration. Is that correct? If that's so, tell me a bit more about what data integration is and how you find that works well with the sort of businesses you work with.
It's a really interesting question because, like so many things, everyone has a slightly different definition of data integration. But what we mean by that is realizing that when you look at the metrics, especially in the environment that people are trying to measure, there is actually no one technological solution to meeting those. And there isn't going to be one. We have vast amounts of remote sensing data and products starting to come out. That's fantastic. But for example, you may get really good cover maps, but they're only telling you something about cover. If you need to know things about water or carbon stock change or emissions or biodiversity, then you're going to need to attach to those data a whole lot of other aspects of models and information. Further, if you also want to use the system then to be able to do projections, for example, and scenario analyses so that you can try to determine what are better management actions to reduce your impacts, then you're going to need to integrate those data and drive them forward. And that's what we mean when we talk about integration.
What typically is a sort of a smart solution to this?
A smart solution is to understand what it is that you're going to need. And so typically the first thing that people are interested in is maps and spatial information. And this is where the real power of remote sensing products come in. You can produce fantastic data back in time because there's obviously really good archives of many of these data sources. And with the ever-increasing volume of information pouring out of new satellites, the potential for getting better and better information is ever-increasing. The key is to not try to push the technology too far. So it's to use the data to the best of its ability. From there, you then need to start picking data points around how you manage any individual pieces of land, what your models would be, for example, for carbon and other things that you need to attach to those systems. So you could imagine that if you have some maps that say I was forest and now I'm not forest, that's a useful metric. But if you want to know other information, then you'll be able to say it was forest and now it's not forest. I need to know what caused that change. What did it change to in terms of what was the future land use? What were the carbon stocks prior to the change? What were the carbon stocks after the change? What's going to be the ongoing impacts of management on the emissions?
Sure.
And so it's bringing that information together.
And I guess there's a bit of a danger when we think of innovations and technologies that businesses might go down a route where they think, well, there's a magic bullet for one bit of it, one type of technology can solve all my problems. Is this a danger you recognise? I mean, should companies really be thinking, well, what's the technology I should use individually to look for different things, look at soil or to water use or other issues?
That's the key, is to really look at the technologies and what they're best for. But the real key and the work that we do with Flint Pro is to provide an underpinning framework. You actually have a singular system that you can start pushing all of these different data into and processing them. So while you may have different data, different models, you have a single calculator that means at the end of the day, you're producing results that are coherent and they're consistent across the landscape.
And using the right technology in the right place.
Exactly.
Is that then how you think businesses are best to produce a coherent approach in this regard, to looking at their impacts and then being able to translate that and be transparent with their stakeholders?
Yes, exactly. And I think the other key part with having a core framework that you're using is the continuous improvement process. And again, this came up in the discussions earlier around the perfect being the enemy of the good. And the key thing for many organizations is to start with something. You have to start with what you've got. And then every year, just continuously improve that, identify where the problems are, change data, improve models as you go. And that gives you an ability to, as through time, you may not be so good now, but in 5 years' time, you can have a fantastic system.
So one thing you said in the session I thought was really interesting was you need to encourage companies to develop programs and not just projects. So moving forward then, what does that mean for you when you're talking to your clients?
Well, it means actually engaging with them as a long-term partner. So it's not working, as we've seen with a lot of ESGs or other type of reporting, where it's typically brought in as a consultancy, the consultant writes the report's finished, it goes into the annual report. And again, this came up in the session, it's how do you turn these into operational frameworks that basically operate the same way as you would with your accounting software, your HR software, it just becomes part of your day-to-day management. All of those processes inside companies, programs, and that's where you need to get to with these.
Sure. It's all fascinating stuff. Rob from Million Group, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much.